The light that burns twice as bright burns half as long, but burning the candle at both ends keeps the candle makers in business. It's Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is a man who was once stranded for 4 years on a deserted planet, but never wavered in his ability to make a snarky comment.
Mike Secretio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm good, how are you?
Great. All right. Great.
That was a lot with the candle thing. I don't know what's happening there, but I liked it. I was impressed.
Thank you. I mean, this is a Ridley Scott movie, so I was quoting Blade Runner and then adding my own thing to it.
Nice. Nailed it.
Because that's how we do on the Film Bookcast.
Snarky comments.
All right. If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, essentially we start with some film news, and then we usually move on to some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever media we've been consuming lately. After that, we'll move on to our featured review. This week, we are reviewing the newest film from director Ridley Scott, The Martian. All right, Mike, you ready to kick things off?
I am, yes.
All right.
We're good to go with Throttle Up for this.
What'd you say?
Said we're good to go with Throttle Up for this.
All right, good. All right, so film news. First story. Pacific Rim 2 is a movie that always seemed like a very dubious proposition. Right?
I mean, only if you think about it in terms of this will probably be a bad movie, but
I never thought for a second that Pacific Rim 2 would be a bad movie.
Okay.
I just need
to clarify, Mike.
What I meant is that Pacific Rim didn't exactly set the world on fire, like, box office-wise.
Okay.
And it always seemed odd that Pacific Rim 2 was, like, gonna happen.
Okay, now I see what you're saying.
Right.
I got it.
Well, now, it doesn't look like it's gonna happen.
Yeah, probably not.
Pacific Rim 2 has been delayed indefinitely. It was supposed to be released in 2017, and now it is no longer on the calendar, and nobody knows what's going on with it.
Yeah, the thing I'm most upset about is, well, I guess one, that we probably won't get this movie. The second thing that I'm most excited about is Pitch Perfect 3 took its release date. So, like,
yeah,
that's some bullshit.
A little bit. I mean, you know, I've actually not seen either of the Pitch Perfect movies.
On principle, I haven't either. So
I've heard they're pretty good.
I would rather watch giant robots fight giant monsters. Maybe it could just be giant robots in an acapella sing-off against giant monsters.
Honestly, I would watch the movie 5 times on opening day. That's that's the kind of movie that seems made for me. But
that's what I would watch.
Pacific Rim 2, I mean, I am a huge fan of the original Pacific Rim. And Guillermo del Toro, I think, brings a lot to that movie. But that movie, it works very well on its own, I think. But I was really excited for the prospect of a sequel. Everything that Guillermo del Toro has been talking about Pacific Rim 2, just sounds awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's been talking about how, like, in the first movie, Charlie Day has to, like, has this merge moment with the monsters where he, like, the monsters get in his head and he sees their whole plan. And you see, he was saying in Pacific Rim 2, you would see the follow-up to that, like, how that's affected Charlie Day, and that would be, like, the backbone of the movie.
Oh, my God. I want that so bad.
Right? You know, the thing about this is Pacific Rim did not make a ton of money, but it made a pretty good amount of money overseas. So it, like, basically broke even. And the thought going into Pacific Rim 2 is that, well, this movie did very well critically. People liked the movie. They said maybe they weren't aware of it or whatever when it first came out. And so the thought is that maybe Pacific Rim 2 could be a pretty big hit.
Right.
Or it could be a pretty big disaster. Like,
yeah, it could go either way.
It could go either way. And I think the studio doesn't seem like it really wants to risk that. So it's more of a financial issue than anything else. Yeah. But Guillermo del Toro still seems to think that it's going to happen at some point.
I feel so bad for Guillermo del Toro because it seems like every awesome thing he has, the studio's like, nah. People have wanted Hellboy 3 forever.
Yep.
And it always seems that, like, every movie he makes is like, oh, this movie has to be successful that he can, so that, like, people will give him money to make Hellboy 3. And now people are saying Crimson Peak needs to be successful so that he can make, I forget what was the next one that he wants, but something else, so that if that's successful, he can make Hellboy 3. And it's like,
I feel like Hellboy 3 is such a pipe dream at this point. I feel like
even
if it happens, I feel like Del Toro might not even be involved. I feel like he's got like 20 other projects on his plate right now.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's become like a recurring joke where, like, Guillermo del Toro will decide to direct something or decide to produce something or write something. And, like, you know, there's a good chance you'll never see it.
Like, he is like, definitely all over the place.
And, like, he will, like, get attached to direct something and then have to drop out, like, weeks later or months later, or even put in a ton of work into something and then be forced to drop out. He was supposed to direct an adaptation of At the Mountains of Madness a few years ago.
Yes.
And that was, you know, watching the news of that coming out was, like, really, like, fascinating, because you could see how, like, things had to keep changing. You had to keep recasting the lead. Eventually, it was going to be with Tom Cruise. And that was going to be, like, the one they were going with, and then the budget had to be slashed, and eventually he had to walk away. And then he was supposed to... Guillermo del Toro was supposed to make The Hobbit. Like, that was going to happen. Yeah,
that would have been amazing.
I would have loved to see Guillermo del Toro's version of The Hobbit. Like, I like Peter Jackson as a filmmaker, but he had done everything he could possibly done in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And his Hobbit just felt so tired and so, like, boring, and, like, it just felt... It, like, Guillermo del Toro could have brought something really fresh to it.
Yeah, that seems to be the arc of his career.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Not that he's like struggling.
Yeah, as a rule, I generally don't believe that Guillermo del Toro projects are happening until I'm sitting in the theater watching them.
Until you're so, there.
For all I know, Crimson Peak is this elaborate hoax.
Yeah, we'll find out.
You know, I'll find out when I get there. But Guillermo del Toro still seems to think Pacific Rim 2 is going to happen, and he was talking. He tweeted the other day that. If he had a meeting with Maisie Williams, who plays Arya in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
And he like tweeted the other day, like, oh, I just met Maisie Williams. Amazing, amazing person, amazing actress. If Pacific Rim 2 ever happens, this girl's getting a Jaeger. And
it's like, what a, cool. Such an optimist.
Yeah, exactly. He's so enthusiastic about his craft. He's like so excited about anything. Like, so yeah. I really hope Pacific Rim 2 does happen at some point. But even, that said, I mean, Crimson Peak is coming out in a couple of weeks, so I will have a taste of Del Toro in the meantime.
Something to tide you over.
And even, hopefully, like, he just gets to make something else after Crimson Peak, even if it's not Pacific Rim 2. Just something. You know, I want
to hope so.
Well, I'm sure he'll come out with something eventually, but, like, Pacific Rim 2 was going to come out in 2017, so I'm hoping he can make a movie after Crimson Peak to be released.
I think I had heard that he said that he was like, I'm just going to make an independent Spanish language film.
That would be great.
Which is what Pan's Labyrinth was. So
yeah, like, that's a lot of his filmography is like that. Kronos, yeah. Devil's Backbone, Pan's Labyrinth. He hasn't done one of those since Pan's Labyrinth.
Exactly. So if he goes back and does something that can excite people like that movie did again, maybe the studios will have some more confidence.
Maybe. You never know.
But probably not, because it's Guillermo del Toro.
He's going to be struggling for his entire life. It's sad. And then our next bit of film news, this actually came out earlier today. So there's a movie called The Flash that's coming out in 2018. And it looks like The Flash has found a director in Seth Graham Smith, who is the author of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Now, Mike...
Yes.
Are you familiar with the work of Seth Graham Smith? Have you read his books?
I have not read those books, no.
Okay, neither have I.
great. All right, moving on.
he was also the screenwriter of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, the movie, and also Dark Shadows, the Tim Burton movie.
Okay.
Dark Shadows is the worst. I hated that movie.
Yeah, so maybe not the best choice.
And he's also writing Tim Burton's sequel to Beetlejuice that's supposed to happen at some point.
Okay.
Much like Pacific Rim 2, that's another like pipe dream, I think.
Yeah.
But if that happens, interesting. Great. But yeah. It looks like Seth Graham Smith is writing and directing The Flash and developing it from the story that was written by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, which we talked about in the past.
Right.
So, I mean, like, he's a sort of comedic... He's a comedic horror kind of guy.
Yeah.
Do you think he's a good fit for The Flash?
Sure. I don't know. It's like, I haven't been watching the show, so I don't know... If there is, like those Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter or Slayer or whatever it is, like the whole, like you said, it's like a horror kind of like tongue-in-cheek aware of the fact that,
right.
Like, these are classic, like, Pride and Prejudice, but we're going to add zombies to it. And, like, that's the joke, kind of, I think. I don't know, does The Flash's story lend itself to that kind of thing?
I mean, maybe. I mean, it's, here's the thing about The Flash. The TV show is going on right now. Season 2 actually starts tomorrow. I can't think of a single thing that a Flash movie could do that I'm not already getting from the TV show.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, when you told me we're covering that, I didn't even know or remember at least, that there was a Flash movie coming out. But it makes sense, because, like,
right.
DC's got to copy Marvel now, so...
But the Flash TV show is great. Like, it's a lot of fun. It's really lighthearted. It's really, like, energetic and funny. And Phil Lord and Chris Miller are developing the story, which actually seems like a pretty good fit for that kind of tone.
Right.
And I could see Seth Graham Smith kind of working in that tone as well. But I think the best thing that the movie could probably do is try to differentiate itself from the show as much as it possibly can. Because you're, like, theoretically, if the show's not canceled by 2018, which I don't think it will be.
Would we need a movie?
Yeah. Like, so if we're going to have a movie in 2018 and the show running at the same time, I think you're going to have to make the movie as different from the show as possible in order for it to, you know, be successful or be good.
Right. Yeah. That's true.
Because no matter what, like, people are going to be comparing the show to the movie now. It seems the movie seems like very much an afterthought.
Yeah.
To me, in a lot of ways, because it's like, okay, we need to do, like, movies for all the Justice League characters. Oh shit.
We already have TV shows.
We already have a TV show on The Flash. Okay, well, rather than give The Flash TV show its own movie, which would be kind of cool, we're just going to do this separate thing.
So I don't know. We'll see what happens, I guess. So we'll have to wait and see what more announcements there are.
Yeah, I mean, I...
But you pointed out to me earlier that this will be... his directorial debut also.
Yes, that's also true.
Which seems like a big risk for DC to take on, like, their attempt at Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge movie for somebody to do for their first movie, you know?
Presumably, if this whole DC thing is still working by then.
Yeah, if the DC Universe hasn't collapsed on itself by 2018, then Seth Graham Smith will be writing and directing The Flash. Did you hear the rumor that... apparently they're having a lot of difficulty getting a director for Fast and Furious 8.
I did see that. And then that there's going to be a final trilogy to end it.
Yeah. Vin Diesel's like, one last trilogy to end the series. It's like, okay, so three more movies. And then probably once Furious 10 comes out, like, they'll be like, all right, one more trilogy.
One more trilogy.
Or one more Decalogue. So
yeah, I like that.
another 10 movies.
I like that they're saying one more trilogy. Like, what? Like, it's gonna do three more movies?
Yeah, but one of the rumors going around for Fast and Furious 8 is that Vin Diesel wants to direct Fast and Furious 8 himself.
Oh my god! He will have finally ascended,
right? And that would be his. I guess his directorial debut, or at least his second movie. I think he directed like a smaller movie a long time ago. And he also directed a short film that came out along with Fast and Furious 4.
Okay.
Which was like, an add-on to that movie that's like on the DVD. So Vin Diesel may end up directing Fast and Furious 8. The studio does not want him to direct Fast and Furious 8.
Oh my
8,
god.
From what
that
I
would
understand.
Be amazing.
Vin Diesel's also suggested that Rob Cohen should come back to direct Fast and Furious 8. Rob Cohen was the director of the first one.
Wow. I want James Wan to direct all of them.
Yeah, but apparently I would love James Wan to do it again.
That would be so dope.
But apparently they offered it to him and he said no.
Oh, James Wan, no.
And apparently they offered him like a quote-unquote life-changing amount of money.
And he still said no?
And he still said no because the production of Furious 7 was apparently really difficult on him. Like, difficult for his health, apparently. Like, he started having health problems.
Like, because, for real difficult.
Like, and I can imagine the production of Furious 7 was probably really difficult because Paul Walker died while filming.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's right.
You have to, A, deal with, like, your grief over, like, your co-worker and friend dying, but also, like, you have to...
Still make the movie
and rework your entire, like, plot and characters and everything. So, So Fury 7 was probably, like, a really difficult shooting period. And apparently they offered it to Justin Lin as well, who directed Fast and Furious 3 through 6, and he also passed because he's busy with Star Trek anyway.
Right.
So they're having a lot of difficulty finding a Furious 8 director, so it's going to be really interesting.
We'll see what happens.
It's going to be really interesting to see how that goes. But that's a little off topic. Our last film news story.
Fast and the Furious is never off topic, man. Just kidding. It always is.
You know, I'm with you on the first point. I think a year ago I would have been with you on the second point, but now that I've watched all the Fast and Furiouses, I am a big fan of the last three. So,
all right, 3 out of 8, not bad. Or 7.
3 out of 7. That's almost half.
Almost.
That's a better batting average than a lot of franchises have.
That's a good point.
In any case, our final film news story for this particular podcast. Steven Soderbergh is spending his retirement doing as many different things as he possibly can. And he's apparently developing an experimental choose-your-own-adventure project for HBO, where viewers decide the outcome of the story by selecting like various things on an app that's going to come out with it.
That's what? Crazy. Yeah. This sort of reminds me, one, that I would love the shit out of that. That would be so cool. Before I go on as divergence. I think that would be really cool. I think it would be I think it would be cool to do it as a series, just to see, like, to influence, like, the next episode rather than
right.
a movie. I don't know. I think that would just be more, like, if you're going right. to do Choose Your Own Adventure.
I think,
like,
it is going to be a series. I'm not really right. sure. It seems like it's very, like, vague what they're talking about right
yeah.
now.
I hope it's a series because, like, if you're going to do Choose Your Own Adventure, like, do it. Like, revel in this for as long, like, for a season. I want to do this forever.
Yeah, I have no idea how this is going to work. That's going to be so much different kinds of, like, different filming.
Yeah, like, that would be wild.
For, you know, this thing. And, you know, what's going to happen to the other stuff that's not used? Like, how is that going to work? What do you...
Yeah. I remember Psych did this to an extent in the, I think, probably their final season. They did a Clue episode.
Okay.
They had people tweet, like, with what a hashtag to deter for the fans to vote on which, like, who was the culprit.
Okay.
And they just filmed all the different versions of it. And then they put the ones that didn't happen up on their website afterwards. So, like, that was kind of cool to see that happen. Yeah, much smaller scale.
Yeah, a lot of the news outlets that were reporting on this actually compared it to Clue, the ending of Clue, because right. the way that movie worked when it was in theaters was that there were three different endings to that movie, mm-hmm. and when it was in theaters, you only got one of those endings, and it would just be random.
What? That's awesome! I didn't know that.
Yeah, so if you went to see Clue in the theater, you could potentially, and your other friend went to a different theater to go see Clue. You could potentially see like two different endings.
Two different endings.
And on video, they just put all three endings like in a row.
Right. That's really cool. I remember listening to Joseph Gordon-Levitt was on the Nerdist podcast a couple months ago, and they were talking about, you know, hit record and, like, all this stuff that he does, and he mentioned that he had an idea. He didn't go into any details about it, about doing Choose Your Own Adventure, and he wanted to make it, like, a special event, like, you know, like at some theater in Hollywood where they were, like, you close all the theaters and it was like
right.
it would play a moment and then say, for this option go to theater number 6, for this option go to theater number like that, and have like a 5-minute break where people could swap theaters and then you could see that. And then
that sounds exhausting.
It sounds crazy. Yeah, like he said it would be like insane and like it would be just like a one-time thing. And he said he pitched it to his studio and they were like, what if we just make an action movie and call it Choose Your Own Adventure? Like making fun of like the battleship, like the just taking a brand name and making a movie that's unrelated to it. And he so, I mean, if anyone could develop this into a usable version, I think it's HBO and Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah, I mean, the talent involved with that makes us feel like it's more than just, like, a gimmick.
Exactly.
Really wild. And it's tentatively titled Mosaic. So more on that as it develops. This just seems like it's such a crazy idea. I'm not sure how long it'll be until we see this.
Until HBO is like, nah, it'll cost too much money, and then they cancel it.
HBO.
RIP Utopia.
HBO is pretty fast and loose with its money, but yeah, RIP Utopia. Utopia is not officially dead yet. You know,
right?
It probably is, but it's not. Officially
but probably dead. It's Pacific Rim 2 and Utopia will come out on the same day.
Exactly. Yep. It's going to be the new Chinese Democracy or Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah.
It's
Duke Nukem Forever. There's a whole list.
Whole list of things that just take forever to come out.
Yeah.
I mean, Pacific Rim 2 is not – like, things don't reach that list until it's taken, like, 10 years, I think.
That's
so Pacific Rim 2 is still –
it's been, like, 2 weeks since we've known it's that delayed. And we're like, no, it's never going to happen.
Well, let's – okay. So Pacific Rim 2 is supposed to come out in 2017. The original came out in 2013. So if it's 2023 and Pacific Rim 2 still hasn't come out, but – people are still saying it's going to happen at some point.
It's in that.
That's when it is in the
on that list.
On the list. That's how we're gonna.
That's your definition.
We're gonna need to like form a formal name for what that is, like the 10-year in development club or something. Like.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. In 10 years, we'll have a name for it.
And then the making of the list could be on the list.
On the list, exactly.
I love it.
That joke brought to you by Dan Harmon.
Yes, and theoretically, a community movie might end up being on that list.
Might be
too.
On the list, yeah,
know.
Right.
So he was actually saying, you know, the future community, like, nobody really knows what's going on, but all the actors' contracts are up. They're probably not going to do a season 7. And, you know, if it's going to come back, it will be in movie form almost definitely, but nobody knows.
Right.
Nobody knows when that's going to happen, so.
No.
It's sad, but. But that said, let's move on to our discussions.
Yes.
So, Mike, why don't you talk about what you have to discuss today?
Sure. So, I originally was going to talk about a thing that I didn't see yet.
I mean, you can talk about it if you want. I'm not stopping.
Well, I mean, so I was going to just raise awareness. Alan Tudyk and Nathan Fillion of Firefly and many other things fame made a show from Kickstarter. It's called Con Man. It's on Vimeo. If you search... I think Con Man Vimeo on Google because it's got some weird URL that's not handy to remember. It'll be the first thing that pops up. It's just a web series about what it's like being super famous for a thing you did once, like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And like that's all you've done now. And going to conventions and stuff. But anyway, seems really cool. I guess the thing that I realized I was going to actually talk about because I watched it is Twin Peaks.
Okay.
So... Twin Peaks is one of the weirdest shows that's ever been made ever, and it's the best. directed, written, created by David Lynch in like 1991, I think.
Okay.
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yes, early 90s, yeah.
Yeah, early 90s. And it's a detective. It basically made like modern procedural crime drama thing. But what the story was, I had watched it, or I thought I had finished it, and then I was on Netflix, and I like happened to just be like, oh, let me look on the continue watching thing, my list. And I saw Twin Peaks, and I was like, what, this is bizarre. So I clicked on it, and I realized I still had like 4 episodes left in season 2. So I just finished that this week.
Okay.
Season 1 is 8 episodes, and you could definitely tell that it was one of those, like, let's just make this and see what happens.
Right.
So that finishes, and then season 2 is 22 episodes.
Right.
So it's a big, it's kind of a big time, like time commitment compared to season 1.
Sure.
But the series finale of Twin Peaks ends with the weirdest, most, I can't believe that like, this was on network TV in primetime and super popular, 20 minutes of a show that I've ever watched ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like straight up David Lynch going, I'm David Lynch, and you're watching this on primetime and network TV here. Whoosh. Like, just bizarre, like, people talking backwards. And, like, okay. Strobe lights just cut, like, he got, because, like, he can. I don't know. It's really weird, and it's amazing. And if you're into David Lynch things, you'll love Twin Peaks.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you're not the first person to.
No, I know.
To praise
I know
Twin
everyone
Peaks.
Has heard of Twin Peaks, and then, but the, I mean, really, I wanted to watch it because, well, the thing that made me like actually want to watch it was Psych did a Twin Peaks episode.
Okay.
And it's amazing.
You're really hitting the Psych references hard well, this episode.
That, I love that show, and also their reference episodes, like they do themed episodes a lot.
Right.
And those episodes are great. The best of the series, probably. But anyway, watch Twin Peaks, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
But mostly, the thing that got me hooked into it was, like, I can't believe that this was on primetime on a network that, like... Now, I mean, now it's kind of, I wouldn't say normal that, like, a huge film director is making TV shows, but like in the early 90s, I feel like that was way more rare.
Right.
Yes. Especially someone like as weird as shit as David Lynch.
Yeah. Now, are you going to watch, have you seen the movie Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me?
No, but I've got that ready to go.
Okay.
That'll be next.
Very cool. Yeah. I have not seen any of Twin Peaks. I've actually seen, like the first 10 minutes of the first episode, which I watched in a class once.
That's awesome.
And I really enjoyed those first 10 minutes. I do plan on watching Twin Peaks very soon, because it's been on my list for a long time, and I'd like to catch up before the new season comes out.
Yeah, they're filming season 3 right now.
Yeah, David Lynch is directing every episode. It's going to be airing on
Showtime.
Thank
God, because apparently I was reading about it. He directed almost all of season 1, or not, I don't know if he directed, but was like...
He was there for most of the show. I think he left about halfway through season 2.
Maybe. Yeah, so there's a mystery they're trying to solve, and they originally apparently were never going to solve it.
Okay.
Because they want to just explore this town and the people in it, and the network was like, no, solve the murder. Like, this is a TV show, you have to solve this thing. So they solve it in like episode 10 or 11, I think, of season 2, and David Lynch was like, peace, I'm out, and left.
Then he came back for the finale, I guess?
Yeah, and then the show started to tank because it's not like... It's David Lynch's show.
Yeah, everything I've heard is that after they solve the case, the show kind of like takes a decline for a little while.
Yeah, there's like a whole subplot of like one character goes crazy and thinks he's Robert E. Lee and needs to like have the South rise again. Like for like four episodes. Like what? That's really weird. Yeah. So they brought him back for I know at least the finale and maybe the episode before. I don't remember.
Yeah.
And it is, and you could definitely tell where it's like someone with his experience and his vision,
right?
Is like, no, this is what needs to happen.
Yeah.
So that's really cool, and it's like kind of a spoof of, like soap operas. So like really hammy acting, but alongside like really serious stuff. And it's like really, it feels very subversive now to go back and watch it. So do that.
Okay.
And it's on Netflix, so you don't have to worry.
Definitely gonna watch it soon. It's on my list, and I do plan on watching it. That's Twin Peaks, and also Con Men,
and also Psych apparently.
And also Psych. Yeah, you want to just throw Psych into the discussions?
Later? Yeah, sure. Well, so Psych started now.
Yeah. All right. So, and for my discussion, I have a couple movies I wanted to talk about. The first of which is called Sleeping with Other People. It's directed by Leslie Headland, who directed a movie called Bachelorette with Kirsten Dunst a couple years ago. This movie stars Jason Sudeikis and Alison Brie. Also features people like Amanda Peet, Adam Scott, Jason Mantzoukas, who is amazing in this movie. Super funny. And this is a romantic comedy between Jason Sudeikis and Alison Brie. It's really enjoyable. It's really funny, and it feels very honest. It's like more it kind of transcends a lot of the romantic comedy tropes in a lot of ways. This is, on paper, Sleeping With People, it's about... Jason Sudeikis and Alison Brie are both people who are, like, very bad at relationships. When they were in college, they went to college together and lost their virginities to each other and then never saw each other again. And then they happened to meet up at a sex addicts meeting, like, 15 years later.
All right. Right. I'm on board so far.
And Alison Brie has just broken up with her boyfriend, and the guy that she's been sleeping with for, like, 10 years is getting married. So she's, all like, right. on her own. And Jason Sudeikis is, like... this guy who just is a womanizer and cheats on, like, everybody. And basically, they get together and just to be friends, they make a rule not to sleep with each other. But, of course, they
feel like I've seen this before.
Yeah. So it feels very, like, it hits a lot of the same notes that you've seen many times. But it does it in a really fun way. It's really funny. I mean, just, by casting Jason Sudeikis and Alison Brie, like, you have these two people who are just really funny in general and who have, like, a really great chemistry together. And then you have the cast surrounding them with just, like, Adam Scott. Jason Mantzoukas, who is, like, improvising like crazy, and he's really, really funny. I mean, have you seen a ton of things with Jason Mantzoukas in them? Because I've been, like, seeking out him a lot.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, he's a... I mean, he's on The League. Like, yeah. You know who he is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, he's on The League. He appears in the Comedy Bang Bang podcast a lot, and he's hilarious on that podcast. And he appears on the show every once in a while. In any case, Sleeping With Other People, I think it fumbles a bit in the ending, which kind of dials back its message a little bit, but it wins it back with some charm. So, you know, overall,
good time though.
Yeah, it's a really enjoyable, really funny movie that I think people should watch. And the other movie I want to talk about is Black Mass. Which was directed by Scott Cooper and stars Johnny Depp as Whitey Bulger. Also stars Joel Edgerton, Benedict Cumberbatch, and Kevin Bacon, among several others. So Johnny Depp is really good in this movie, and there's some very good scenes in the movie. But, I mean, the movie doesn't really do that much new.
Yeah, that was every reviewer that I saw about it or read about it was, Johnny Depp is amazing, and the rest of the movie's meh.
Yeah, it's weird, because everything about this movie, it feels technically accomplished in pretty much every area. Like, it doesn't do anything outright bad, but it doesn't do anything particularly, like, good either.
Right.
You know, it just kind of feels like this kind of, like, static, like, okay, this is a gangster movie.
I wonder if it's because Johnny Depp is, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I wonder if that kind of effect happens because Johnny Depp is so good that the movie doesn't, like, meet him there, so it's just kind of like, meh.
Maybe. I mean, the thing is, Scott Cooper has directed some good movies in the past. He directed Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges. He directed Out of the Furnace with Christian Bale. And these are movies that were really well regarded, but Black Mass just kind of falls flat, and I don't really know why. It just feels like, you know, there's something that it feels like there's not that much energy to it. And you know, again, there are Johnny Depp's really good, and there's some very good scenes in the movie, but I don't know. Just like, I'm not gonna watch it again. I feel like I've seen it.
All right.
I came out of that theater and I did, like, was genuinely like, it's one of those movies where, like, I was thinking, I couldn't tell you that much about it after I saw it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I saw it, and it was fine, and I came out of it, and people were like, what'd you think of the movie? And I'm like, it was fine. I was like, do you have anything else to add? I'm like, nope.
No, it happened.
Yeah, I had the same experience with Exodus Gods and Kings, which I just watched last week in preparation for The Martian, because I love Ridley Scott, and I'm a huge fan of Ridley Scott, but I hadn't seen Exodus because the reviews of that movie were, like, universally terrible. Yeah. And now that I've watched it, I can see why.
It all makes sense. Yeah, I happened to catch the last hour of that or so on HBO, and I wasn't really, like, paying attention that much, and then I noticed that the character, that was Aaron Paul, and I just lost my shit.
Like, yeah, it's weird that Aaron Paul's in that
so
movie.
Weird. Like, why?
Yeah, and there's so much issues with that movie. Like, you know, there's things in that movie that were, like, done better in a movie from 1950, The Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
You know, like, the parting of the Red Sea in The Ten Commandments, a movie from 1950, looks cooler than the parting of the Red Sea from a movie in 2014. Like, that shouldn't be the case. That's,
no.
You know, all the technical and visual advancements that we've come up with in that 65-year span, and... You know, nothing.
And Charlton, it's the sheer raw power of Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, Charlton Heston is, like, you know, powerful as Moses, and Christian Bale just kind of feels like he's sleepwalking through that role a little bit. Although, at the beginning of the movie, he's sort of playing Moses like he's playing Bruce Wayne, and it's kind of fun. Also, God in the Exodus Gods and Kings is portrayed as this whiny child who is just really upset that people aren't paying attention to him.
Yeah, I wonder if that was Ridley Scott being like, yeah, fuck all you guys. But anyway, enough about that Ridley Scott movie.
Yeah, let's talk about the other Ridley Scott movie that just came out. Let's move on to our featured review of The Martian.
I guarantee you that at some point, everything's going to go south on you.
Ready?
And you're going to say, this is it. This is how I end.
Commander, Mark is dead.
We have to go. Yeah.
Now, you can either accept that, or you can get to work. This will come as quite a shock to my crewmates, and to NASA, and to the entire world. But I'm still alive. Surprise. Here's the rub. It's going to be 4 years for another mission to reach me. And I'm in a hat designed to last 31 days. So I got to make water and grow food on a planet where nothing grows. But if I can't figure out a way to make contact with NASA, then none of this matters anyway.
We've got an incoming message.
Mein Gott.
Mark Watney's still alive.
In your face, Neil Armstrong.
All right, that was from the trailer for The Martian. It's the newest film from director Ridley Scott, written by Drew Goddard and based on a novel by Andy Weir. It stars Matt Damon, okay, let's maybe preface this by saying this is the coolest cast of 2015.
Ever.
Or ever. Like, it's such a great assemblage of talent, such a weird collection of people. So it stars Matt Damon as the title character, The Martian. Just...
Oh, I wish that was actually his character's name.
It also stars Jessica Chastain, Jeff Daniels, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Sean Bean, Michael Pena, Kate Mara, Sebastian Stan, Kristen Wiig, Axel Henny, Mackenzie Davis, Benedict Wong, and Donald Glover. And I think that's such a weird collection of people, and then Donald Glover makes it. Like, that's like,
and then nails it, yeah.
Like, that's like the nail, like the nail in it. Like, oh, man, and also Donald Glover's in this. Like, what? Yeah. the IMDb plot summary of The Martian. During a manned mission to Mars, astronaut Mark Watney is presumed dead after a fierce storm and left behind by his crew. But Watney has survived and finds himself stranded and alone on the hostile planet. With only meager supplies, he must draw upon his ingenuity, wit, and spirit to subsist and find a way to signal to Earth that he is alive. That's actually a lot more than we usually get out of an action plot synopsis.
That's a really apt description from IMDb this time.
Yeah. Yeah, I usually use IMDb because it's really vague and it's pretty funny. But this time, I'm like, oh, that is the plot of the movie. All right, good job, IMDb. So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Ridley Scott, whose work – the thing is, Ridley Scott's work is often pretty hit or miss for me, but it always looks beautiful.
Yes.
And with the right script, I think he can make truly incredible movies. And even without the right script, I think his movies are better than people give him credit for. I am one of the few who thought Prometheus was pretty good.
All right. Yeah, me too. All right.
Enjoy Prometheus. I think that movie is one of the most visually fascinating movies I've ever seen. Yeah. Also, The Counselor, another recent Ridley Scott movie that people were pretty mixed on, but I thought was maybe not good or great or even good, but I mean, there's so many great scenes in that movie, and like that movie just looks incredible, man. Exodus, you know, it's whatever, but
see our previous segment.
Yeah. I think, so I'm a huge fan of Ridley Scott, and I'm also a pretty big fan of Drew Goddard, who wrote this movie and was originally going to direct this movie before leaving to do Sinister Six. So that turned out great for him. Drew Goddard co-wrote and directed The Cabin in the Woods.
Right.
And it was also, and it's pretty much from the Joss Whedon school of writing. He used to work on Buffy, and I think he worked on Angel and Firefly and all those old Joss Whedon shows. And this is based on a novel by Andy Weir. And I think you've read that novel, right, Mike?
I have, yes.
Okay, I have not read the book. What's your thoughts on the book and like how...
It's actually really funny that you think of that I didn't put that together, that it was written by like a Joss Whedon alum sort of, because when you said like the snarky comments, that those come off now as like Joss Whedon-esque things.
Yeah.
But all of that is the book. Like this is one of the most faithful book to film adaptions that I've seen. Cause I mean the whole thing almost, I mean, in the novel we do have the, you know, coming to Earth to NASA thing back and forth, but for the most part it's all you know, Watney's journal basically,
right?
So we're in his head for the majority of the film or book and the film also.
Yeah.
And he has a very specific personality. He's hilarious. And Damon, I was a little nervous for a second, but he nails Mark Watney. And it's awesome, and he does have that very funny, like the scene in the when they first makes contact, and they're, you know, everything you type is being broadcast live.
Right.
In the book, they show what he says, and it's hilarious. They don't show. I'll save that, I guess.
Okay. Spoilers. Yeah.
But yeah, like those kinds of things where he's very funny. And he has to be. You're stranded in the most desperate, dire situation any human's ever been in before, and if you are. Right. Don't have any levity, you're dead.
Yes. All right. So it sounds like you're a pretty big fan of the movie. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
Look, so everyone should read the book. It was amazing. And I have to give huge props to Andy Weir. He's just a dude who's a computer engineer that wanted to write a book. This is self-published this first.
Really?
Got picked up by a publisher. This is his first book novel he's ever written, and it's now like a smash hit film.
Yeah, this movie actually did really well at the box office this weekend, like $53 million on its opening week, which is really great for a movie that has very little action.
Yes.
I mean, it's an original concept. Like, it is based on a book, but it's a...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and the book's big draw to a lot of science fiction... I mean, it's science fiction in, like, we don't have manned Mars missions yet, but, like, that's about as science fiction as it gets.
Right.
Because we're meticulously researched and did all of the math and science. It's a hard science book. Like, and there are, like, the scene when Watney sits down and he's like, all right, let's do the math. We have to figure out how many potatoes and all that stuff. Like, that chapter is him literally just doing a math proof. Like, it's just like that whole, there's a lot of stuff like that in the novel. And for someone like me, who is not great at math and, you know, but I have interest in science and stuff, it was still, like, riveting because that's his survival thing. Like, that's what he needs to do to survive. Yeah, so exactly. It's still awesome.
Yeah, I'm also a huge fan of this movie, The Martian. I think it's Ridley Scott's best film since at least Gladiator, and possibly since Blade Runner.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if I made, like, a top five Ridley Scott movies list, this would probably be in it. Like, I was a huge fan of this. You know, I did think it was funny that Matt Damon was doing this role because it's reprising two of his roles. because he's reprising his role from Interstellar,
yes,
where he's the astronaut stranded on a planet. It's also reprising his role from Saving Private Ryan, where this is a movie where the goal is to bring back Matt Damon at whatever the cost.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it was really funny. I remember Andy Weir doing an AMA on Reddit, probably like right around when they announced the casting for the film, which was right recently after Interstellar. And obviously the book had been out before that movie came out, and you know, Matt Damon's role in that film was quiet. It was a big cameo surprise in Interstellar. Right. And somebody asked him about that, and he was like, yeah, like, I'm obviously a little pissed, like, or at least I think he said, like, he's nervous that people are going to make this comparison that he's playing the same character, even though it's not. But obviously it's a joke for us, but I remember, like, Andy Weir totally acknowledged it, and it was really funny. It was like, yeah, whatever, it's what it is. Unfortunate, but we're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, and I thought, and the Martian has, like, one of the most unique and coolest casts, like, assembled in a long time, delivering just this fun and smart dialogue from one of the filmmaking's, like, visual masters. And, you know, and that's, like, it just seems like it's a slam dunk. Like, this is like,
yeah,
all right, get one of the best directors working today, take a book that was really good, apparently, I haven't read it.
Check it out.
Adapt it with Drew Goddard, who's a really great screenwriter, and just assemble the coolest casts we possibly can.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the, it's like perfect storm of awesome situations.
Yeah. And I think one of the coolest things about this movie is that it shows how fascinating it is to simply just watch people solve problems.
Yeah.
Like, step by step. And you were saying before, like, you know, you're not that big, like, good at math or science, and neither am I, but, like, I am interested in that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I love watching people science their way out of things, like,
puts it.
You know, that was a big draw of, like, Breaking Bad for me, was that you could see Walt, like, use science to get out of whatever situation he's in. And this movie is the entire movie.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah,
that's the whole thing.
There was actually, you know, XKCD, the webcomic, they had a comic for The Martian that I read, so I thought it was really funny. It's two guys, like, one of them on the computer, and it's like, ooh, trailer for The Martian. What's that? Movie of a book I liked. Should I read it? Depends. You know the scene in Apollo 13 where the guy says, we have to figure out how to connect this thing to this thing using this table full of parts or the astronauts will all die? Yeah? The Martian is for people who wish the whole movie had just been more of that scene.
Oh, it's so true. Yeah. That's what this is. Like, it's just Watney solving science problems.
Yeah.
And also the people on Earth doing that, too.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a lot of fun watching Matt Damon by himself on Mars, like, using science to solve his problems. But the movie cuts back to Earth a lot, and I think the Earth cast is just as compelling, if not more so.
Yeah.
Because you see, like, the bureaucratic politics that go into having to deal with this.
Yeah. Yeah, and
having to deal with this horrible thing that happened to one person.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Andy Weir and Drew Goddard, you know, they kind of understand the audience pretty well in that, like, there's a lot of nerdy shit that gets said, like nerdy jokes and stuff.
Yeah.
But not, like, making fun of nerds. It's like, these are just references, like, nerdy references, I guess. Right.
There's one reference in particular that I really, really loved, and I'm going to save for spoilers, but it's going to be the first thing I talk about because I thought it was amazing. and yeah, and this movie has a lot of humor in it, which I think is really what makes it. You know, it's really funny throughout, and that doesn't take away from the tenseness. Like, it's very tense, especially in the finale, and I think that actually adds to it because, like, I don't know, it's just like you have these situations where, like, a character, like, I can't really say that much without getting into spoilers, but like somebody like Matt Damon will compare himself to Iron Man.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Things like that.
You know, while dealing with this like incredibly like horrible situation, like life or death situation right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember there's a moment because each the sections in the book where we're in Watney are just his journal entries. And some of them are really just some of them are, like two sentences long because like this is the entry he made.
Yeah.
And I remember one of them, he's like something. He's like, when I remember playing Dungeons and Dragons in high school and there's a spell called create food and water. I always thought it was like the most useless spell ever. Why would you ever need that shit? I really wish I knew that spell. And that's like a whole chapter. That's it. Just stuff like that. And it's like, you know, Watney. And there's another one where he just, it says something about, he's like, I wonder how Aquaman would survive on Mars. Like that's a whole chapter. Just like stuff like that where Watney feels like you, he's very relatable to, for the audience and in the movie too, as well. Stuff that things like that happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really great. The acting highlights. I mean, what did you think of the rest of the cast? Like who do you think kind of stood out the most to you? Outside of Matt Damon, obviously.
Obviously Matt Damon. Donald Glover was amazing as that character. I don't remember his name, but
yeah, I love Donald Glover. I thought he was Rich Parnell was his character's name.
Yeah. Rich Parnell. And I'm like, I have to be, like I said, this is one of the most faithful book to film adaptations. So everyone is the character from the novel. Like, it's great. I really wish they had utilized Kristen Wiig more because her character plays a bigger part in the, well, not like an instrumental role in solving the issues, but she's the PR person.
Right.
So like, she's always there and she's the only like non-nerd in the whole.
Yes. she has some
making
great lines.
Fun of them.
She has some great lines in the movie too, though, like referencing that aspect of her character.
Yeah, she's the only non-nerd, and she has she's the like dirtiest mouth. Which I mean, the movie is PG-13, so they had to cut a lot of the cursing out.
Yeah, I was that actually did bug me a little bit, the PG-13 rating, because you could feel it at certain points.
Watney curses a lot.
Yeah, specifically, there's the scene where he's talking to NASA through the text message thing. Spoilers: Watney gets to contact NASA. But he's talking to NASA through the text thing, and he's saying the F word, and even on the screen, it just says F dash 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 dash. And I was like, that took me out of it for a second because I was thinking, like, does NASA like self censor their?
their
computers. That can't possibly
it
be
made,
true.
Yeah, it would have made sense. Work. Like because there's the scene I referenced earlier where he's like, "Oh, be careful! Every word you say is being broadcast live." And then we cut to the after reaction where, like, obviously he said something bad. So we know he's not censoring himself.
Right.
Yet in the screen, he's censored. But I thought they did a really clever one when he's in the rover and something I don't remember exactly. And then it, like, cuts to outside the rover and we see him through the window
and
cursing.
You see him shouting, fuck, but you can't hear him.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty clever way to do it.
Yeah, there are moments like that. But then there's moments where you could just see the censored version on the screen. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, why is that happening? So I think the rating hurts a little bit, but I think it's sort of important that this movie is rated PG-13 because I saw this movie in a pretty packed theater and there were a lot of kids in that theater and you could see like how jazzed the kids were after the movie and like how excited they were about science and space exploration.
Yeah. This is like the best PR thing that's ever happened for NASA.
Yeah. Like this could be huge.
Yeah. That coupled with their announcement of water on Mars.
Yeah. Which was definitely timed like because of this movie was coming out.
I thought for a second, I said to a friend of mine, I was like, what if NASA's announcement, they're just going to come out and say that Mark Watney is alive. And like, that's like, what if that was their...
That would be pretty awesome.
That would have been amazing.
But yeah, I mean, I think apparently they worked with Ridley Scott on this movie a little bit, at least. Like Ridley Scott had talked to them, and I guess apparently they told Ridley Scott that water was on Mars months ago.
Really? That's amazing.
And Ridley Scott was saying like, I mean, I found out about that from NASA, but it was too late to change anything in the movie, so it was whatever.
But yeah, like... I watched the HBO 15-minute thing they put out for new movies, First Look or whatever it's called. And apparently that's the rover design is like a prototype design from NASA. And like NASA was involved. Like they gave them what like the landing craft and they gave them like blueprints for that, all that stuff, what that would look like.
Right.
So that's pretty deep that NASA was actually involved in the film.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And Yeah, so acting highlights. I mean, I think Donald Glover, we talked about a little bit. I thought he was great. He brought a lot of the same energy to this role that he brings to Community, I thought.
Yeah, like, very much.
In many ways, I thought his character was just like a smarter version of Troy.
Like, God. It's if Troy and Abed had met, like, were one character.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, actually, yeah, exactly. Because he kind of has, like, Abed's tics, but he's, like, using Donald Glover's facial expressions. There's one moment where he does, like, when he has the realization what his plan could be, that he does the same face that he does, you know, where he does the wide-eyed thing. It's the same face where, like, he's terrified of LeVar Burton.
Oh, my God. You're so right. I didn't notice that.
I thought it was pretty great.
And
also, Kristen Wiig is great in this movie. Jessica Chastain, I thought, was really great. Everybody in this cast is just, like, doing really great work. I thought Jeff Daniels was terrific.
Oh, he was great.
And he was essentially just playing Will McAvoy from The Newsroom.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But doing it in, like, a different capacity. And, you know, I thought that was really great, too. Everybody's just so great. It's so great, man.
It's a great... It's weird. It's like... It's a story of human triumph, in a way.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's funny that, like, how that makes you feel good. Like, seeing that scene. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, definitely. Seeing this fictional thing happen. I don't know. It makes you come out feeling good after this film.
Yeah, definitely. So I think overall we both like the movie a lot. We're going to move to spoilers in a little bit. I did want to say that I feel a little bit bad for Drew Goddard, who... Because he was writing this movie and was going to direct it. And I think he probably would have done a really good job with the movie, too, as a director. But he ended up dropping out to focus on Sinister Six over at Fox, which is going to be the Spider-Man spinoff. And not only did he drop out of that, he also dropped out of being the showrunner of Daredevil to focus on Sinister Six, which is going to be the Spider-Man spinoff.
He needs a new agent.
And now Sinister Six is not happening.
But like, you know what? I'm glad because we got Ridley Scott on this. So
yeah, and I mean, Ridley Scott, again, visual master. I thought the Martian looks great. Did you see it in 3D or 2D?
3D.
Okay, I saw it in 2D. How was the 3D in this movie?
It was really good, and there are no scenes that you can tell were made just for the 3D gimmick. Like, even in Mad Max Fury Road, at the very end, there's the guitar comes out of the screen.
Yeah.
In a movie like that, where there's none of that stuff, except even that has it. But in The Martian, there are no things like that. And I appreciate that because I hate when I'm reminded of the fact that I just paid $5 extra for some bullshit gimmick.
Right. And you want to be like more immersed in the story. You don't want it to be like,
I don't want like a thing to fly out of the screen.
But I mean, I kind of wanted to see this in 3D, but timing meant that couldn't happen. But the 3D for Prometheus was some of the best 3D I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I remember that was like really incredible. So I'm glad to hear the 3D and this was good. If I see this again, which I probably won't get a chance to because there's so many other movies coming out. Yeah. You know, the 3D would probably be the way to go.
Yeah, it was good. It makes Mars look really awesome. Like, the vastness of it, like, when he's out.
Yeah.
Out of the hab.
Yeah, and definitely. And I think a lot of that is a... thing is, like, this movie could have been very heavily CGI, but it's a lot of practical sets and stuff. They actually filmed... They found, like, a desert and filmed the Mars scenes there.
That's awesome.
So, like, I don't remember where it was, but it was...
It was a real place.
It was a real place, for the most part. And, you know, there's stuff like that. It makes this movie feel more lived in. It feels more real. Yeah. And I appreciate that about it.
Yeah, I mean, and especially I'm glad, too, because the novel is so focused on the real science and the real situation and real hardships that to have... If the film had been, like, Matt Damon in front of a green screen, that would have taken away a lot of that feel.
Yeah, for sure. All right, should we move into spoilers for The Martian? All right, let's move on to spoilers for The Martian starting right now. All right, so let's get into spoilers for The Martian starting right now. So the reference that I referred to earlier that I said I was going to talk about spoilers, there is an epic Lord of the Rings reference in this movie.
Yes.
That is amazing. I was completely blown away.
And that's in the novel too, which was amazing.
Is it really? I feel like even if it is in the novel, the movie one-ups it in a way. And I'll say why in a second, but I'm going to explain it. So they're deciding what to do with Mark Waddy, and Donald Glover has this plan and calls like a meeting with like Jeff Daniels, who's the head of NASA, and a couple other people. And he refers to the meeting as like Operation Elrond.
Council of Elrond, yeah.
Council of Elrond. And Kristen Wiig comes in and is like, wait, what is Elrond? Why are we calling this Elrond? And like somebody's just like, oh, because it's a secret. I think Sean Bean is there. And he says, like, oh, it's like a secret meeting. Like, you know, whatever. And she's still not getting it. And it's like, well, yeah, but why Elrond? And like every guy in the room just starts explaining to her, like, oh, it's a secret meeting. It's from Lord of the Rings. Like, that's. And they keep going on for a while. Kristen Wiig's like, I hate fucking all of you.
But
the best part about it is that Sean Bean is there. From Lord of the Rings. Like, he played Boromir.
And he's
explaining the Council of Elrond to Kristen Wiig.
It's amazing. So I forgot that that scene happens when I read the book about a year ago. A while ago. And I talked to my mom and I convinced her to read the book. And she was like, oh my God, like, this is amazing. So I asked her what she was up to. And she was like, oh, I'm up to the scene with the Council of Elrond. And then I remembered who Sean Bean is playing. And then that his character is in that scene, like 3 days before I saw the movie. And I was like, yeah.
And you were just like praying, like, please, please get that scene in the movie. Like, that's,
this has to be there. Oh my God, please. And it was there. They did it. It was so good.
That was so funny. I thought that was pretty amazing. And but so Donald Glover's plan to bring Watney back was also something talking about spoilers. Donald Glover's plan to bring Watney back is essentially so throughout the movie, Watney's crew who left him behind is still traveling to Earth because it takes like 2 years to get back to Earth, something like that, right?
Like 18 months or something crazy,
something along those lines. And so his plan is for them to like use Earth's orbit to kind of turn around, and loop around and head back to Mars and do it with such speed that when they get there, they can like just pick them up and they can go back. It's a crazy plan, but is the plan they end up going with. And you know, I thought so. The Ares crew turns around to get Watney, and I think that the roundtable scene where they're deciding to like do it is really great. I thought that like brought about the team dynamic really well.
Yeah, it's really cool too because they do nail. There's very few chapters and moments and stuff where we get to see the crew because you know it makes sense because they're not involved in this decision for the majority of the.
Yeah, they don't even know that Watney's alive for half
for a long time.
Yeah.
So that scene where they decide to mutiny essentially to go against the orders of NASA. It gives us a chance to learn and humanize those characters so that we care whether or not they because there's a lot this is one of those it kind of gets to a point where like literally everything that goes wrong or it's Murphy's Law, anything that can go wrong will go wrong.
Right, Interstellar.
Exactly. where like everything Watney tries fails for the most part. And they even cut stuff out. So this is almost a perfect adaptation. There's one thing that goes wrong that they kept out at the end, but it doesn't take away anything because it's just another like way. It's like, look, Mars is trying to kill Watney. Like it's just more shit like that. So like, it's not that important for the story.
Yeah.
But it would have been awesome because it would have been a Mad Max style sandstorm. It was a second sandstorm happens. Would have been awesome.
Yeah.
To see. But like the fact that that's not there doesn't really matter. And but yeah, the crew, all of those people do awesome things. I've had forgotten that Michael Pena is like a person until Ant-Man. Like, and now, anytime he's on screen, I'm just like smiling because he's awesome. He's so
good. He's a great actor, and he's definitely doesn't get the due he deserves a lot of the time. But he's always great in whatever he's in. So I think that whole climax was really great. The idea that he had to like take the top off of his. Go into space with nothing but a tarp covering.
Yeah, they're launching it with a convertible.
Really great. And that whole sequence was really expertly done. It gave the entire crew something to do, which I thought was interesting. It felt a lot like the way the crew dynamic worked a lot, and like the group dynamic. You don't get see them that much, but when they are there, it felt a lot like the crew from Alien. You know, how they all kind of feel like, all right, we've been all here for a long time. We've been together for a long time. We know each other very well at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all like friends, and but we also somebody had compared The Martian to Alien because you know, Alien, the plot of Alien happens because Sigourney Weaver decides, or Sigourney Weaver wants to follow protocol, but she's forced not to follow protocol, right?
Right.
Because somebody is going wants to come on board who is like infected, and they don't want to let him on board because he's infected, but he ends up coming on board, like her decision's overruled.
Right.
And this movie, The Martian, Ridley Scott, almost 40 years later, has made, is about, the entire story takes place because they followed protocol.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah. It's interesting to see, you know, the different, all the different, like you said, the bureaucratic stuff that goes into this and like, what is informing people's decisions? Like Jeff Daniels saying, you know, it's better to lose one person than to lose five, like, or, you know, like trying to having to make that kind of decision. And
right.
then Sean Bean feels that it's the cat. It's,
Chastain,
yeah, the captain's decision to do this. Cause it's her crew. Like, you know,
yep.
And I don't know. It made an interesting dynamic.
Yes, definitely. And again, the scenes with Damon on Mars, you know, just him growing potatoes or him making water, it's really thrilling. Like, it's it's exciting to see him get like be successful at that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, like the it was cool to see things happen because in the book it's his journal. So like the when the water explosion fail, like when his water creating water fails, it's him. It's like when he sits down to. Like, you know,
right.
in the movie, it blows up, and then they show him sit down, and he's, like, all singed and smoky.
Yes. Yeah.
So, like, we get the stuff from him from that perspective. Like, we don't get to see it as it happens, which was cool. It's cool to actually get to watch things happen. But then, I forgot I was going to say. Whatever. Go ahead, Mike.
I don't know. I feel like we've pretty much talked about this movie a lot. I don't know if there's any other spoiler-ish things I want to talk about. But again, I mean, I think this is just, it's a really fun movie, really well directed, really well acted, well written, you know, it's just like that assemblage of talent is just kind of a slam dunk. Like how can you go wrong with the, with this?
Yeah, exactly.
Movie?
What did you feel about the disco joke?
I thought that was hilarious. I thought that was, yeah, the recurring joke that, Mark Watney hates disco and it's the only music that's available to him. Really great. And yeah, it's just all the just the snarky asides and the funny moments, like they really make this movie feel very memorable as compared to something like Gravity, which is a movie that I really liked. But it's like I feel like The Martian's going to stay with me more. You know, in that aspect, because I grew to care about the characters a lot more than I did in Gravity.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the book, too. Oh, I can say what the thing that he says.
Oh, sure.
But before that. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that, like, to humanize Watney there. I mean, in the book, too, the captain has all of the loves disco and, like, 50s TV shows, so he's just watching, like, Gilligan's Island and Happy Days. Well, not 50s, but you know what I mean? Like, that era of, like, those TV shows,
yeah.
Which is why he does the Fonz.
Yeah.
That's when they take his picture.
I think there's a scene of him watching a TV show in the background.
It's on in the background, yeah.
Right.
But, there's a couple of chapters of him, like, ruminating and like fan theorying over all this stuff because he's got nothing to do but watch these shows. It's awesome.
All right, so you're making me really want to read this book, actually. So
good. Yes, everyone should read this book. It's great.
Yeah. So what does Watney say in the book?
Right. So there's the scene there. He's talking to Kapoor, who's an Indian character in the novel, which people were pissed about that for some reason they made him American.
Okay, that was who was that Chiwetel Ejiofor's character?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they changed his name to Vincent. I don't remember what it is, but they made him American, or half American at least. But anyway, he's talking in their text chat, and he says, "Be careful, everything you say is being broadcast." And then it's Watney's like, "Oh, really?" And then it's one line, and then the next line he just does. Parentheses, dot parentheses, like makes boobs and then says, "Look, boobies." And that, like, they made it like it's so much like he cursed or something like that. But I really wish they had shown that because that informs the like his character so much of like what his outlook and situation is.
I definitely, I think, I feel like the way that worked in the movie though, like it kind of just leaves it up to your imagination what he said.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think the him smiling, like smirking at realizing he's being broadcast, and then cutting immediately to Jeff Daniels, like on the phone with the President of the United States, saying like, "Yeah, he's under a lot of stress. Like, don't worry about it."
I'm sure he didn't mean what he said.
I thought that was a really great comedic moment. So
yeah, it still works in the film a lot, but it was one of my favorite moments in the book. To show that he's just like a big child, also, basically.
All right, so I think we can pretty much wrap up our review of The Martian.
Yes.
But we're both obviously huge fans.
Yeah. Right?
And definitely check out the book, I guess, if you haven't read it yet. I'm probably going to do that at some point.
I know it was on sale on Amazon for like $3. They had like a huge sale. I don't know if it's still going on, but check it out.
Okay. Yeah, I think my dad actually read the book, so I think it's in my house somewhere. So one of these days I'll get around to it. All right. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
Find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
And you can find me at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, as well as all of my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. And this week, I will be at New York Comic Con.
Whoa. Look out.
Yeah, going to be awesome. And I'm going to be periscoping the entire thing through Filmbook's Twitter account.
Going to be MikeBot.
Exactly. So if you follow filmbook.com, twitter.com/filmbook.com, you can watch me live blog my entire Comic-Con experience. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Yeah. All right. So thank you for listening to FilmBookCast. If you're listening to this review of your podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@film-book.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about, the title of your email. We've got so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. And again, I will be at Comic-Con this week. If you follow FilmBook's Twitter account, you'll see me there. Join us next week for the next episode of The Complete Works, where Mike and I will be discussing Nicolas Cage's role in The Boy in Blue. And check out the next film bookcast, where Mike and I will probably be reviewing Bridge of Spies. Right, Mike?
Yeah, most likely.
All right.
I don't know what else is coming out, but sure.
Well, there's a bunch of movies coming out in the next two weeks. So this coming week is going to be The Walk and Steve Jobs.
Okay.
And then the week after that is Bridge of Spies and Crimson Peak.
Yeah, probably Bridge of Spies.
Yes, Bridge of Spies. Early react. Bridge of Spies just premiered at New York Film Festival yesterday, and reviews are very strong. So I'm very excited. Spielberg is one of my icons. I love Ridley Scott, but Spielberg is like
he's your man.
Yeah, he is he's the guy who's gotten me into movies when I was a kid. Like that's anytime a new Spielberg movie comes out, it's just so exciting for me to do. So I'm excited to review Bridge of Spies, and I think Filmbook wants us to do like a podcast about my experience at the Comic-Con.
Okay.
So if you want to interview me about my experience at the con.
I get to put the host hat on for once?
Yeah, you could be the host of FilmBookCast.
Oh my god.
That'd be great.
I don't know if I can live up to that, Mike.
That'd be a lot of fun. You should do it. All right. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we are out.